You're listening to Album Swap, a podcast about sharing music with your friends.
Welcome to episode, what are we on, 11?
12.
12 of Album Swap. I'm Fred Dees Jr. This is my co-host, Brian McDonald.
Hello.
Hello, hello. So here we are, episode 12. We have decided that we are going to change up a little things, shake up the bag, if you will. We're changing up the format. Rather than going with a lot of long segments where we break down each song, we're going to try out a couple things differently. So kind of keep an ear out as we get to each one during this episode. We will make a point to explain it briefly, so you'll have an idea of what we're about to do. With that said, let's go ahead and jump on into the albums that we're gonna swap. The one I swapped with you was Anderson .Paak, Malibu, which I love. That guy is the man, like just oozes talent. I saw him at Hopscotch last year, and it was one of the most electric live shows I've ever seen. Like, they tried to pull him off the stage at the end because their sound equipment kept messing up. Like, his in-ear monitors kept messing up. And so in between songs, they were delayed more. And they had some event organizer trying to pull him off stage, not physically, but like telling his sound guys to get, you know, Anderson and the band off. And then Anderson looks at him, and rather than jumping off the stage, jumps on top of one of the speakers and busts out into one more song. And it was just bananas. Like, it was it was crazy. It was awesome. And this album is I just think top to bottom really, really, really impressive. And especially with kind of how music is nowadays, I think it is a great representation of the fact that there is a ton of talent out there making music right now.
And I gave you Primus, Sailing the Seas of G's.
And I know you've been pumped. You've been waiting to give me that Primus record.
You know, after much begging, I gave it to you after I think we saw him this summer. You for the first time, me for like, I don't know, the umpteenth time.
Incredible show.
I have to say it was the best of any Primus show I've probably seen, other than maybe the early days when they were pretty high energy and fresh.
How many times have you seen them?
Probably about 10 times.
Okay.
They've played Raleigh actually the past couple years, and they've gotten better and better as they've gotten more into expanding their songs and their sound a little bit, and kind of digging back to some of their older stuff that was a little more raw, had a little bit of that kind of metal punk thrash to it, but at the same time having less Claypool's weirdness wrapped all around it. And that's one of the things I love about this band. When I first heard the first album, John the Fisherman specifically, I was just like, wow, that's that kind of quirky sound I really love.
Right.
And then this was the first album of theirs I ever bought. Just loved it because it kind of was a bit of a concept album. You know, it was kind of like Pink Floyd meets Rush and just gets weirder.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yes, a good way to put
it. So, Primus, Sailing the Seas of Cheese.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. So, we will get to breaking those down. We're going to take a break right fast. We're going to come back with a little background info on both of the bands and the albums. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Album Swap, and we'll be right back.
The first album we're going to review tonight is Anderson .Paak, Malibu. Released in 2016. I love the name, by the way. Malibu, just kind of...
Oh, yeah.
Beachy.
Very beachy.
Southern California.
It's a popular beach.
What's not to like?
Yeah. Popular California beach.
Yeah, very, very popular. Very wealthy, too.
Yeah.
So Anderson .Paak, his real name is Brandon .Paak Anderson. So I like the switch. And it's Anderson space dot .Paak.
Sure.
As I found it.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't get that reason, so I was going to ask you why the dot and the space.
It's very intentional. We'll come back to that.
Okay, we'll come back to the dot and the space. I thought it was a mistake at first.
Oh, no, not at all.
I had to double check it. Anyway, so this album is his second album from .Paak, who was born in California. He comes from African-American Korean family. Had a bit of a rough upbringing. Father seemed to be bit of a jerk, to say the least. Attacked his mother, basically got took away, and he said he never really saw him again. He played a lot of music as a kid, playing in like his church. He was producing music as a teenager, like in his bedroom. And in fact, he was a drummer, I believe.
Oh, yeah.
To start off with.
He's self-taught, too.
Yeah, self-taught. He had actually gotten married and divorced and then married again. So it seems like he went through a lot as, you know, a young adult. Kind of growing up quick. Definitely probably growing up in the tough streets of L.A.
I think growing up quick is a good way to put it, yeah. He definitely had to grow up quick.
And one of the interesting things that while he was between these two marriages, he was actually working at a marijuana farm in Santa Barbara, California.
Mm-hmm.
And he was let go and became homeless with his new wife and infant son. He then was accepted into the L.A. music world, working on the debut album. And I can't pronounce it. Is it Shafiq Hussain?
Sure, we'll go with that. I think that was as good of an effort as anybody can get, right?
Of Sun Sa Ra.
Mm-hmm.
So these guys helped him out, employed him as an assistant, videographer, editor, writer, kind of jack of all trades.
Yeah, probably learned a lot of everything. That was probably a huge learning experience, kind of catapulted it.
Yeah,
probably.
Definitely.
Sharpened those skills.
And worked on the album OBE Volume 1. He then became the drummer for an American Idol contestant, Haley Reinhart.
Mm.
Which I thought was interesting, fun fact. And the one thing I really liked about reading about his background was this cover art album he did, where he had looked at old country and American artists in the 60s who had taken a lot of the blues songs from African-American musicians.
Absolutely.
And covered them. So what he did was he reversed it. He went and found old rock songs that were originals, like one's Neil Young, I believe.
Yeah. There's a Beatles song on there.
Yeah, there's a Beatles song on there. Blackbird, yeah.
It is an incredible...
And I did go listen to that, and I loved it. I thought that was amazing.
Isn't it cool?
Yeah.
It is.
And so he did more of a modern hip-hop...
He took their songs.
Kind of jazz-influenced thing that he does and did it that way.
It's very neat. That's definitely something listeners check out if you get a chance. What's it called? Cover art? Isn't that right?
It's cover art. And actually, I think from the label, you can download it for free, which is
really cool. Oh, very cool. Yeah. I remember a year or two ago whenever I was getting into Anderson .Paak, and that was the first album. Somebody told me to listen to Blackbird or the, is it Heart of Gold, I think is
Heart of Gold,
that's the one that he does with Neil Young, or the Neil Young song that he does. And I just going out and hearing that for the first time is what got me into Anderson .Paak. It was just like, wow, this is kind of next level thinking to do a song and to do it for the reasons why it was done.
So he released cover art. It was on independent label Hellfire Club. And the OBE labels. One of the things I've noticed, there's like 8 labels every time he releases something.
Yeah.
That's kind of the crazy music world
now,
we live
yeah.
in now. And also, I guess, because he does a lot of collaborations.
Right.
So then in 2014, he released his first album, Venice. He actually performed on Dr. Dre's album, Compton.
Right. Yeah, I think that did a lot for him connection-wise, probably. Getting to meet the doctor helps out with the type of people you know in California. Especially in the music biz.
Yeah, he was featured on 6 songs on Compton. And then he comes out with Malibu, which he had 4 singles that he released and a Grammy nomination for Best Urban Contemporary Album.
Yep. It's incredible. Incredible. So I figured out the dot. The dot is intentional. The dot stands for detail.
Oh, I like that.
Stands for detail. So kind of as a reminder, always remember the details. And if you listen to his music, looking at the album cover, the album art, if you are a follower of his social media, specifically his Instagram, detail every single thing he does, details in it. Everything. So check it out. NPR too, NPR Tiny Desk. Check out Anderson .Paak's Tiny Desk.
He's on the Tiny Desk
from like
series.
A year or two ago. Whoa.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Just mind blown.
Electric factory. NPR still hasn't been the same. The dude's incredible. Super talented. Yeah. All right. So now a little background on Sailing the Seas of Cheese. Love the way that sounds right off the bat.
Great
so,
alliteration.
Yeah, great alliteration. So the band's name is Primus, formed in 1984 in San Francisco. The original 3 members were Les Claypool on bass, so he's the most famous, the most iconic one in the band, everybody's going to know. The other 2 original members were Todd Huth and Jay Lane. That's from, they played in the band from 84 to 88. Now, they both dropped out of the band in 88, towards the end of 88. I think it was like December of 88. When they dropped out of the band, two guys join right at the start of 1989. Now, this lineup is kind of considered their most iconic lineup, I guess.
The best.
Yeah, this is the best lineup. This is the one that from 1989 to 1996, they came out with four huge studio albums. Sailing the Seas of Cheese was their second studio album. So Sailing the Seas of Cheese came out in 1991, Primus' second studio album, following their debut album called, very politely, Suck on This.
Suck on This.
Suck on This.
Great
so,
album.
Now, just going back.
Well, actually, wait. So Suck on This is a live
sure
one. The debut album was Frizzle Fry.
Frizzle Fry. That's right. That's right. That's right. Nice call. Now, Dan, just going back, the two members that joined after Huth and Lane were Larry LaLadonde? LaLadonde?
Lur.
I know, yeah, the
Larry Lur.
LaLadonde.
LaLonde.
It is LaLonde. It is
LaLonde.
Look it up. It's
actually
a very odd.
So why, that's why you call him Lur.
That's why you call him Lur. It's a, it's a very odd name. He was the guitarist. And Tim Herb Alexander, the drummer, who is a monster on the kit. Dude's insane.
One of the best drummers ever.
One of the best. Sailing the Seas of Cheese, 1991. I don't know if it, I guess at that point was it their biggest? Like Frizzle Fry, Suck on This were good. They, I guess they kind of introduced them, but I feel like Sailing the Seas of Cheese, at least from looking at it, was the first one that really hit the spot. Like this is
yeah,
really
much,
kind of put them on.
Much bigger sales and play reception. Of it. Yeah.
So yeah, so off the album, three singles, Jerry Was a Race Car Driver, Tommy the Cat, and These Damn Blue Collar Tweakers were the three singles. The album went gold in March of 93, went platinum in December of 2001. You've probably heard a lot of these songs. You've probably heard them if you've ever played video games, especially growing up in the 90s or like 2000s. So ATV Off-Road Fury and Tony Hawk, I'm trying to think which one it was. It was one of the first Tony Hawks, as well as Rock Band 3 had Jerry Was a Race Car Driver in them. American Life, which is like track 3 or 4 on the album, is highlighted in Tony Hawk Project 8 and also Season 1 of True Detective.
Yes.
With Matthew McConaughey and Woody Harrelson. I thought that was really interesting. Like, I mean, I remember hearing Jerry Was a Race Car Driver a lot as a kid. And that was a video that MTV, it was really big on MTV. I feel like you saw that one a lot. A couple more fun facts about the album. So a lot of these songs did random samples. For example, and probably the most famous sample was on Jerry Was a Race Car Driver. There's a line from the Texas Chainsaw Massacre movie where he said, "Dog will hunt."
Yeah.
I think it's Chop Top. Yeah. Chop Top is the character who screams, "Dog will hunt." That is in there. Well, the song, spoiler alert, this song will be highlighted in a later segment, and you'll
hear. Well, and every time you see him live now, it pauses and he doesn't really scream it anymore. He just kind of says, Dog will hunt.
Yeah. We got that in Raleigh, actually. Yeah. So there was a couple other songs that had some really neat media samples that were really cool. Two more fun facts. This entire album, they've played this entire album live from start to finish, I think 4 different times. One of the times, like in 2002, 2003, they had a Tour de Fromage.
Tour du Fromage.
De Fromage, which fromage is French
cheese.
For cheese.
Yes.
Yeah, which I thought was hilarious. Really funny. And I thought that's neat that they played the whole album. And also, final fun fact before we end this segment, Tom Waits is the voice of Tommy the Cat. Go figure. And that's only on the studio version.
Yes.
Anytime they ever play a live or anytime that's ever been recorded for a live anything, it's always Claypool doing it. But Tom Waits was the one that recorded it. So the album is jam-packed full of interesting little nuggets of fun.
Yep.
And we're going to get into it. So this ends that segment, a little background on both the albums. We'll come right back with a new segment we think is going to be a lot of fun for everybody. All right, and we are back. This is going to be a new segment that we're going to do. I mean, this whole episode we're doing a few segments, and they're all going to kind of be similar to what we've been doing, but more segmented. Now, this one, as to give us more digestible segments. There you go. So now this one is going to be called The Good, The Bad, and The Boogie. So we're going to give y'all what we each felt was something good, something bad, and something that kind of gave us a boogie-ness. Like, boogie, think about it more of a universally used term. It doesn't necessarily have to be something that makes you dance. It can maybe make you feel something, make you moved to go do something. Maybe it's the way the album art just looked. It just gave you this, like, really gnarly feeling. That right there is the boogie. So, we'll go ahead and go through it. Maybe it'll help as we start to give examples, but something new we're doing. Hope you guys like it. The good, the bad, the boogie. So, with Primus sailing the seas of cheese, my good is just this, that Primus sound, right? Like, we've talked about it on a lot of previous podcasts where these bands have a tongue-in-cheek kind of comical element to their music. But it's also accompanied by, like, really high level, like, just music playing, music ability. Primus is the absolute top of that. They're at the top of that mountain. Like, whatever you want to call it, and it's not really punk rock, it's not really, well, I don't know what it is, but whatever it is specifically, Primus is the king. And Les Claypool in specific is the king. And so my good is a group of songs that we're going to play. Right now we'll play you guys segments of these and so you guys can get an idea of what I'm talking about as far as that Primus sound. So first track of my good is called American Life. This was track number 4 on the record. This song, the bass is just straight bananas, but this is such a common, like, Primus and Claypool thing that he does, where that beat is just, it just runs along like the backbone, and it just, like, kind of continuous throughout the whole song, but it just sets it, right? It just sets it. And this song, another common Primus element is the guitar is just a shred factory. Like, I mean, he is just going nuts through it, and it just complements the bass so well and the drums so well. I also love how the vocals are like, they remind me a lot of Jim James from My Morning Jacket and kind of Gene Ween of the band Ween. So think about those when we're playing it. We're going to play a little bit here of American Life, track 4 off of Sailing the Seas of Cheese. Just a shred factory. The whole thing is just, I love it. Love the track.
I like how he takes that simple bass line, just kind of repeats it the whole time.
Just kills it.
Tim's going off on drums, and then, yeah, Larry just comes in with these, like, almost like a saw tearing into metal.
I like that. I like that.
It's just, every time I hear it, it just kind
of
gives me
chills. I wish I had thought of that. That was good. Awesome. So that was American Life, again, track 4. That's my first of the good. Second of the good, track 5, right after that, Jerry Was a Race Car Driver. This is maybe their most iconic song. This is up there with Winona, probably. So this one, their video was, it was like a clay, it wasn't all claymation, but it had a claymation elements in the video, and that became something that was common with Primus, both on, it was on this album art, they have claymation, but in other videos they had, you started to see that kind of worked in, and they would bring it in later, but this, it became an element that would, you would see pop up now and again with
Primus. The first like three albums had a lot of claymation.
And I love claymation.
Even into the fourth album, Southbound Pachyderm, they did a claymation video that they'd run during.
That's kind of when they brought it back, was the Pachyderm one.
But the coolest thing about this video is that they're firing up the car.
Right.
They're trying to fire up the car, and Lur actually rides skateboard by him.
Right. Yep.
And hits the guy that's got nachos.
He's got nachos.
And the nacho cheese hits the street, hits the sidewalk, and it turns into claymation. That's the sea of cheese.
And that's the sea of cheese.
Brilliant.
Yep. Yeah. So that this song and this video really ties in everything as far as the name of the album too. So go and check that on YouTube. It's incredible. This song, killer groove. The bell, as far as the ride cymbal, he kills it during the chorus. Sounds so good. And the snare has such a great, solid snare drum sound to it. There's a breakdown around the 130 minute mark that is disgusting, just straight sick. And then after that comes the iconic sample of Dog Will Hunt, about minute and 50-ish. So we will play a little bit of that, and y'all can see what Jerry was all about. Yeah, again, the iconic Primus sound, the bass just going nuts, the shred factory with the guitar, and then the drums really holding it all together. Yeah. Just filthy, filthy, filthy stuff. That was Jerry Was a Race Car Driver, track 5. So the third song of my quadfecta. I like that. My quadfecta of good tracks, kind of highlighting that Primus sound. The third track is called Tommy the Cat. And this is down there about track 8, 7, 8, 9, somewhere around there. Love the drums intro. Love it. Especially after the track before it, which if you listen to the album, you'll get what I'm saying. Track before it's a little weird and it kind of drops the mood a little bit. The drums intro on Tommy the Cat just picks it right back up, kind of gets you back into the feeling of the whole album. The bass right before the minute mark is super cool, super cool. The drums, especially, so there's kind of a storytelling element to this song. The hi-hat, listen to that hi-hat. I love the way that he plays the hi-hat during the storytelling part, because it kind of gives it, it kind of drops the mood down, so you're almost as if someone was to kind of whisper and tell you to listen to somebody talking. Like, the hi-hat kind of gives that element, because it kind of brings everything down a little bit. I love it, love it. And I love the lines of, say, baby, do you want to lay down with me? Baby. Like, that is, the rhythm and everything they're doing lines up so perfectly. It's one of my favorite tracks Primus does, period. And
Iconic.
It's iconic. It's an iconic Primus song, and let's listen to it. Tommy the Cat featuring Tom Waits. Yeah, so again, the iconic Primus sound runs through Tommy the Cat. Great song.
It's brilliant.
Say, baby, do you want to lay down with me?
Well, just the jamming, and I like...
the bass line? Man!
Yeah, the bass line's sick. And then, like you were saying, the jamming with the hi-hats. You know, I've always heard that, but I never really thought about it until just now.
Yes.
But it does. It's perfect for the Tom Waits to come in and do. It's Tommy the Cat.
Especially with how their voices are so rough and just gargled through that whole thing. Awesome. So we'll hop down. So the last part of my quadfecta, whatever term that you use that I like so much. The fourth part of my good is called Fish On, Fisherman Chronicles Chapter 2. Now, we were having a debate. We think this might be some kind of a sequel or maybe the second fish song. Fish related song that they did after John the Fisherman, which is off the first album, Frizzle Fry.
I think it's similar to what Rush did actually on like Moving Pictures and I think Permanent Waves and the next album. They had Part 1 of Fear, Part 2 of Fear, and Part 3 of Fear, and they weren't like the same song or anything. It was just like something they just were like, hey, let's call this Part 2 of Fear.
Or sure.
Maybe they originally had a long song and cut it up into three. Not really sure, but
I
do remember that. It always reminded me of Rush where they had this like... And there was no explanation in the liner notes or anything of like what Fear was.
Well, I could see Primus doing something like, hey, this is just the second song about that had fish in it, and so we're going to call it the Fisherman Chronicles. Yeah. So, either way, I love the song. The build up in the song, especially the drums, like, and especially the toms. Well, the toms throughout the song are great. The way that he plays the tom-toms are amazing. But just the drums in the build up is so cool. The song has a... After kind of the intro, that kind of build-up, it has like this dark kind of rock feel, almost southern rock-ish. Like it has a really neat sound to it. A kind of spooky, high-pitched guitar notes drop just throughout the entire song. One of my favorite tracks. The song really takes off around the 5 minute mark, and then about the 6:30-ish minute mark, it kind of drops back into the song's groove. So this is a longer one. We'll play a little bit of it so you can get a sense, but definitely go back and listen to the whole thing because it is a dirty one. And again, think that kind of Southern rock sound. Kind of, it has that darkness to it. I really, really, really dug it. I feel like it could be one that could quietly be covered by a lot of bands without people even knowing who did the original. So,
anyways, I would know.
You would know. You would know, and I would know. And our listeners would know because they're educated in Primus right now.
That's right.
So, yeah, so we're going to listen to a little bit of Fish On, Fishman Chronicles, Chapter 2. Yeah, so in the intro even has like a Zeppelin feel to it. Like,
yeah.
Like the very start of it. Very kind of rock and roll, dark rock and roll, Led Zeppelin kind
of
feel.
Reminds me of Presence a little bit.
Little bit of Presence. Yeah. Go back and figure out which former episode of our
podcast
that was.
What episode did that come in?
There you go. Yeah. Another thing that we looked up while we were listening to that track is that we were right. One of our theories was right. This is a sequel to John the Fisherman, which is off their first album. This is actually part... Or chapter two of a four-chapter four-chapter fisherman story.
The old Diamondback Sturgeon on Pork Soda, which came out after this. And then not until about 6-7 years ago, they put out Green Naugahyde and Last Salmon Man is part four.
And that was chapter four. Okay, so that was really interesting. Glad we put that little unanswered question to bed.
That's right.
On the same podcast.
You
know it. That's what we do. Real time info getting. That's what I'm talking about. So that right there is my good, and the good, the bad, and the boogie. Hop down to my bad. My bad is a track called Granddad's Little Ditty. Now this is like maybe a minute, maybe a little more than a minute. It's a real quick track. It's right before Tommy the Cat. Kind of like a transition track. This is very kind of typical of Primus. It's that weird kind of Primus stuff that they do. It is, I mean, we'll play maybe 10 seconds of it so you get a sense of the track, but it is not, it's a guy showering and, yeah. And the vocals are modified to sound like real rough, and so you really don't even know what's going on, but then you know that the name of the song is called Granddad's Little Ditty, and I don't care what kind of definition of bad you want to use, but this freaking song,
it's weird, it's
that, man. Yeah, it's weird. I don't even hate this song. I don't hate the placement of the song. I don't hate like what they're trying to do. I'm not saying that it's necessarily a bad song or a bad track, but it's bad in a lot of ways. In a lot of ways. So for my bad on this is Granddad's Little Ditty, which is right there before Tommy the Cat on the track listing. So we'll play probably about 10 seconds of that so you guys at least know what we're talking about.
Southern Shore, singing up around the pondering the possibility that I call the plans too much. To the friend that fills the air, it just flutters.
All right, so we'll get down to my boogie part of this segment. And again, boogie can mean anything. It makes you feel something, whether it's dancing, wanting to say something. Who knows? Whatever it is that makes you feel that thing, that's the boogie. And so my boogie on this album is a track called 11. Now, this track is just, I mean, it's crazy. Like, it doesn't even really make sense that a band would do a track like this. So, time signature, the most common one people are going to find is a 4 over 4. Because everything's even there, right? Sometimes you get 3 over 4. So you count 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, as opposed to 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4. Exactly. So, those are common ones. You see that a lot. One thing you never see is an 11/8 time. Like, 11 over 8. It doesn't... For a drummer, that already puts my brain into like a scrambling machine. I've got scrambled eggs in my head right now. Like that is beyond difficult. And so every single time I listen to this song, right from the first note, it just makes me laugh because my brain's put in a pretzel. Man, it is so crazy. You get a lot of heavy feels of like Neil Peart from Rush in this. Like, I mean, it sounds like something he would do. It is a mean opening. The drums are so awesome. And here in my notes says so sick. And I got four eyes in sick. That's not how you normally spell sick. Yeah, it's awesome, man. And dropping the intro beat around the 45-50 second mark is so sick. Just nasty, man. It's just, the whole song is amazing. And then when you think of the fact that the time signature is just, it's bananas. Vocals are very opera-like too, which I like. It kind of, and then that kind of gives it that Primus feel with the kind of vocals, I think. That and the fact that they're taking on something that most bands wouldn't even consider doing. So the track is called 11. It's right after Jerry Was a Race Car Driver on the album. We're going to play a little bit of this. Go ahead and get ready. If you have like a bowl or something, put it close to your face because it's about to get melted off.
So that was Sailing the Seas of Cheese. Now let's do the good, the bad, and the boogie for Malibu.
Malibu, Anderson .Paak.
Anderson .Paak. So my good on this, I have about three songs that I wanted to play. But the good I really liked on this was the really kind of just groovy sound he had with the guitars and the horns.
It's a great mix of instruments on this.
Yeah, yeah. So for, you know, for rap or hip-hop or whatever the hell we want to call it right now, it was a lot less, it was a little more soulful, a little more like, you know, R&B jazzy sound to it with a really good rapper laying down his story, telling his story. So it was a bit different than anything I've ever heard in that aspect. Probably took me a little bit getting used to it first, because I guess a lot of the rap I would listen to would be a little bit more hardcore, where you got like more of a rock sound almost to it.
Sure.
So I believe it's the opening track, The Birds. Just the opening to it.
Oh, yeah.
Smooth. I mean, it's relaxing.
The dude is smooth.
Yeah, and that's the other thing. Like, rap typically isn't smooth. Like rap gets you pumped up.
Well, it's like almost like that. He has a lot of R&B elements in it. So yeah. It's rap, but with a heavily, like underlying theme of rhythm and blues. You know?
Yeah. And I think that's and all the songs I'm going to look at here, just some real songwriting behind it instead of just a sampled sound or a riff that's kind of repeated.
Sure.
He really, to me, is crafting these songs and then, you know, coming in and laying the vocals on top. So let's check out The Birds.
A bird with a word came to me, the sweetness of a honeycomb tree. And now I look what's taking over me, couldn't fake it if I wanted to. I had to wake up just to make it through. I got my patience and I'm making do. I learned my lessons from the ancient roots. I choose to follow what the greatest do. A bird with a word came to me, the sweetness of a honeycomb tree. And now I look what's taking over me, couldn't fake it if I wanted to. I had to wake up just to make it through. I got my patience and I'm making do. I learned my lessons from the ancient roots. I choose to follow what the greatest do. I'm repping for the longest cycle. My uncles had to pay the cost. My sister used to sing to Whitney. My mama caught the gambling bug. We came up in a lonely castle. My papa was behind them bars. We never had the want for nothing.
So that soulful trumpet.
I love the
playing
trumpet
over it.
And the trumpet's playing. So there's one thing for a musician to play an instrument. There's another thing for a musician to have to play, or not have to, but to be asked to play at a volume that's not even like loud, or loud's not the correct term, but not like boisterous in any way. So almost asking one to play it like a little bit lower, that makes it so much harder. But it's so much more about like technique at that point. And on that track, when you can hear that he's trying to hold that volume down a little bit, because he's just laying. When trumpet players would play in a really small jazz clubs, like you can't play loud, you got to keep it down. That guy just muted. Yeah, but not muted. He's not using a mute. Right, but he's muffling it. Yeah, but he's keeping that sound down. Man, it is.
It sounds fantastic.
The definition of smooth playing, right there.
One of the other things I liked was some of the sound bites he used in here.
Sure.
And in fact, during Lightweight, I think he has Wolfman Jack, the legendary
DJ. Oh yeah.
Who would have been? I think it was big.
American Graffiti. Was that the movie?
He was in American Graffiti, and I think he died about 8 or 9 years ago. But had that iconic voice.
Oh yeah.
And so I was listening to it, and I heard him, and I couldn't find whether it was him or not, you know, because there's no sample Wikipedia
right
that we could go look it up in. But nonetheless, I just thought that was really cool, like kind of bringing in some of those old school things like that. That just resonate like so for some people that don't know who Wolfman Jack is, it just kind of goes by. But I think then for other people, they're like, oh, that's cool, man. That's, you know, Wolfman Jack, or at least it sounds like, you know, nostalgic sounding.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. My dad used to talk about Wolfman Jack all the time.
It was huge.
All the time.
All right, so let's check out Lightweight.
A little surf of music, baby, a blast from your golden past.
No reason to be afraid. No time to be like that. You don't need me, and I like that. That's alright with me. Send it all. I'll see you from afar, right? Yeah. You know, I really can't fuss about it. You know, I really can't funk without it.
So that's lightweight again, just smooth sound,
smooth.
Like kind of, it almost sounds like a drum machine kind of
smooth
coming
stuff
in at first, but it, I don't know, it just kind of works. It's got a little bit of static in there.
Very cool stuff, yeah.
So the other track I really liked was "Am I Wrong." It's very groovy. It has a lot of just kind of soulful emotion as well.
Sure. Oh yeah.
But just has that just kind of funky, groovy sound to it. Brings it all together really
that,
well.
That smooth, funky, groovy sound just sewn throughout this album, pretty much.
It is. And you know, it makes it a lot less than trying to kind of string together the story through different sounds or trying to, like, almost like a mashup, like sometimes, you know.
Yeah, it's a great way to put it. Voila.
Voila. Yeah. I'm only coming out to play. Nothing more that I hate in this life. The wrong impression, I only have one to make. You can open your palm, waiting to catch a break. The cards will fall where they may. And what about me? I believe in fate. They wanna know where I'll be in 5. But what about today? What about tonight? Only one at a time. So precious. It's yours, it's mine. Only one at a time. My life. My life.
So that's it for the good. Now my bad.
What's the bad?
So my only bad on this, well, there's two things. One, I thought the use of the N-word, I don't know, just seems a bit immature in today's age.
Oh, man.
Every artist gets to do what he wants to do, or they want to pass or use the N-word. Just for me.
Sure.
That's what just didn't resonate with me. And then, I like the sound. I guess kind of missing some of that more rock, hardcore to the rap. That's kind of how rap's changed and moved away from where, you know, it's
rap isn't even the right term anymore.
Yeah,
you know,
in fact,
I mean?
I know. Yeah. This is me being old school.
No, and but so, I mean it was birthed from rap, right? But
yeah,
but
like rap, his vocals are more rap to me. He's a rapper, but he's definitely more than a rapper.
One of the most ironic things in music is that rap is the shortest, like, what I mean, RAP, I guess EDM might be another short term for a music genre, but it's like one of the shortest words for a genre, but one of the broadest genres
out
there.
Yeah. Because it kind of spoke to the way the lyrics were.
Yeah.
So anyway, that was my bad. My boogie on this.
What's the boogie?
Really the soulful emotion he just has throughout, like, it comes across. So even though I'm not, like, a huge fan of it, I appreciated it. Like, I could feel him pouring his kind of heart and soul into these songs. Definitely seems like some of them came from past events.
A lot of pain
and suffering. So I appreciated that in listening to how he's singing and listening to the lyrics. He definitely kind of brings it.
Yeah.
He's not just kind of, you know, doing pop just to kind of get people.
This album is not lacking quality in any track or anything that's done. You can tell that he's like the dot means. The dot stands for detailed. Every single track, every single second of this album is detail oriented. He thought of it all. You really get that sense.
So that's the good and the bad and the boogie for Anderson .Paak's Malibu.
Yeah.
Wraps up our new segment.
That's one of the new segments. Let's wrap that one up and we'll hop back to another one. Okay, and we are back to another new segment. This is just, we need to work on the name for this segment, but
yes.
It's essentially just a question, right? So whatever album was swapped to each other, we're coming up with a question that's based off of that. Now, this question can be anything, so there's not a lot of limits on what we can kind of do with this. So with that very vague description, we're going to kick off this new segment called Questions. And Brian, why don't you ask me whatever question you have from listening to Anderson .Paak's album called Malibu.
So my question is, would you change your name to Fred Dot Jr. and the dot stands for D's?
I don't know. I wouldn't. I would not do that because I would be copying in some way Anderson .Paak, and if I ever became anything of any kind of name worthiness, he'd find me and probably kick my ass.
You'd be a copycat. Though.
Yeah, and Anderson well,
good.
Paak,
that's the answer I wanted.
Seems like a pretty scary dude if you're to cross him. So I'm not trying to cross Anderson .Paak. So no, to answer that question, I would not change my name to whatever you said, Fred Dot Jr. with the dot standing for D's. Now, yep, nope. I'm going to stick with that. The answer's no.
Fred Jr. would be pretty cool.
I'm just going to call it, you know, just Junior.
All Junior. Right.
So my question for you is, you are a more not more of a connoisseur, but let's just say that you notice the albums, the album art on a lot of these albums that we do or that we've reviewed more than I do. Not so much that I don't ever notice them, but you seem to always be one that points it out, and so I feel like you have more of an eye for that. There's albums that you said that you bought or you really remember that album art. So
yeah.
With that in mind, this particular album, Sailing the Seas of Cheese, has a super gnarly like album cover with like a sea of cheese, and there's like a Viking type of character,
yes.
and an octopus,
Poseidon.
Poseidon. That's who it is. Perfect. So it's a very so you know what I'm talking. Perfect. So you know the album art. So my question is, okay. So we always rate these albums with a score.
Yeah.
Rate that album cover.
Ooh, that album cover.
Wow. One out of 10 decimal points, all of it. All of it included, like we've done on all of our podcasts, but rate this album cover 1 to 10. And if you want to give the audience a little bit of an explanation, I don't think it's a bad idea.
You know, that's a tough one. It's a strong, you know, orange yellowish color, so it's very stark.
Yeah.
But the claymation at first kind of reminded me of like Frank Zappa. And
claymation always reminds me of the Christmas.
The Christmas
claymation one.
But those aren't claymation, actually. Do you know that?
Really?
Those are actually like dolls.
Not
the Rankin Bass ones you're talking about.
Gotcha.
Heat Miser and all that stuff.
Yeah, but I'm also talking about the one with California Raisins.
Now, yeah, those are claymation. Yeah,
they're singing Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
Oh wait, yeah. Now see, all right, this
had
is
a very shiny.
This
nose.
Is new.
Oh, yeah.
This is new.
Oh,
Christmas
man.
Stuff.
See, I remember. That's when I was a kid.
I'm thinking more the Year Without Santa Claus.
I know.
Those,
absolutely. Yeah. So those were like super old.
Those
right?
are yeah, like the early 60s.
So I'm talking about like this. The Raisins came out like probably the 80s.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Early
I remember
90s.
Their campaign.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't really... Okay, that's cool. I'm going to have to go find
So that's
that.
The claymation.
I didn't know that they did a Christmas.
It was like a little TV special. Kind
okay.
Of thing. Oh, man, I love it. I'll watch it every single year on like YouTube or Vimeo, wherever you find it. Anyways.
So anyways, claymation...
We're big fans of claymation.
I'm big fans of claymation. I have to admit, though, but like when it came out in the 90s, it was... You know, it was different. You hadn't seen it in a while. And at that point in rock, it had always been very weird stuff like Zappa and all
sure.
that crap. It's different. I usually liked a lot more the illustration that you saw on albums, but I don't know. Primus, it's tough to give them anything negative. So I'll probably give it about like a 7.5.
Okay, I like that.
And I'd say that partially also like the video is so much better because you kind of see the whole vision that Les Claypool has.
Yeah, absolutely, I totally agree. And that was we mentioned that during my Good, the Bad, and the Boogie. We mentioned that when we were talking about Jerry Was a Race Car Driver. The music video for that, there actually is a part where a thing of nachos falls on the ground and all of a sudden it hits and everything.
It becomes a sea of cheese. And I guess that also kind of made...
But it's a claymation sea of cheese. So.
Yeah. I have to remember looking at that album at first, it was just kind of like, wow, this is weird and different. But I think at that time, a lot of album covers were breaking away from what you were seeing kind of traditional, which was either like the photo...
Right.
You know, especially it's like hair metal bands, there's a picture of them and
right.
cheesy logo. And then, or say what you had in the 70s when you had bands like Yes go out and hire designers and create these kick-ass album covers and stuff like that.
Yeah, very, very artistic.
And also it was really at a time when CDs were taking over. So now the artwork shrank.
Right.
So you did the detail was a little bit harder to appreciate than on a vinyl with 12 inches. So I think the videos definitely, almost like thinking about it now, it's almost like I'm surprised we didn't have like animated videos on the CD covers at some point. You know?
Right, yeah.
Yeah, that's a great question.
So 7.5. Yeah, I like my question puts you in a pretzel, bro.
Yes.
Had to think about that one. So, that all right. Where you rank the album cover, you give it a 7.5, or where you score it, 7.5. So, that's our question segment. We're going to wrap that up. We got one more segment left. It's the review segment that we always typically do. We'll be right back with scores. Check out the full albums for each episode at albumswap.net. Fired up, man. We'll get down to the review section. So, yeah, we actually were just watching the video to Jerry Was a Race Car Driver. Turns into a sea of cheese in the last, I think, 30, 45 seconds, but yeah. It is.
We'll share it out.
It's super cool. Yeah, check it out. We'll check it out. We'll send it out on social media and everything. Again, before we give scores and everything, so this is a segment that we've done before. We give the album a score between 1 and 10. Decimal points are encouraged. Brian always goes overboard and goes to, like, the 100th or whatever, but, you know, who's to stop him? We're not going to be doing hashtags anymore because we voted and it was unanimous between two people that they're dumb. So we're going to stop. We're going to stop doing that. But yeah, so again, check us out on social media: Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all of them, and also check us out on Google Play, Apple, iTunes. Check us out on iTunes. Subscribe. TuneIn Radio, Stitcher, and SoundCloud. Also check us out on our website, albumswap.net. So, with all of that taken care of, we'll get to the scores. My score for Primus, their 1991 album, Sailing the Seas of Cheese. I just love saying that, man. Like, Sailing the Seas of Cheese. It feels good.
It is.
Feels like a nice, like I'm hopping in bed, there's a nice blanket on there. Sailing the Seas of Cheese.
It makes you want to go eat some nachos.
It does kind of make me eat nachos. Like a real, like a nice slice of cheese pizza.
Yeah.
Anyways, I'm going to give it a 9.1.
Whoa.
Real strong. I think the album is just top to bottom, like, beyond impressive. It's a lot of fun to listen to. I'm not the biggest fan of this kind of this genre. I mean, we've talked about that. I've mentioned it before on many other podcasts. But it's hard to not enjoy and like all, I mean, just about all of this on this album. Like, if you like rock and roll and stuff, this has a lot of that punch that you like in rock and roll. A lot of that kind of knock to it. But it also has just a level of musical accomplishment that is beyond impressive, and because of that, 9.1, dropping the mic on it. Boom.
Anderson .Paak, Malibu. I'm going with rounded numbers. Going with Ocho. Solid 8.
I like that. Solid 8.
Solid 8.
It's a solid 8.
Solid album all around.
Market 8.
Market 8, dude.
Market 8.
I think he's definitely got some great songwriting ability. Really kind of brings it all together in a nice sound. Good storytelling.
Dude is talented. Yeah. It might not be your flavor, but you can't knock the talent.
Yeah, and that was kind of my impression. Like, it wasn't necessarily my cup of tea, but I could definitely appreciate what he's doing. And, you know, he's somebody that, like, if I had an opportunity to see him, I would probably check it out.
Anybody listening, if you have a chance to see Anderson .Paak, do it. I don't care if it's a Tuesday night, you do it. Blow off work, go see that man. And his band, that's the other thing, is so underrated, is his band. They are so dirty. They're all tight, really, really, really good musicians. So we had two albums with a high level of musical ability.
That's what we bring.
This one, that's what we do, man.
We don't bring albums of crappy musical
ability. We like to think we have decent taste. So.
Although that could be a new podcast, Album Crap.
Album Crap. Yeah, we'll start working on that. We'll start working
on
that.
The world's worst albums brought to you in podcast format.
We'll start working on that one while we work on the next one. So everybody stay tuned. Keep checking us out. Let us know if you like it or not.
You have been listening to Album Swap. Visit albumswap.net for all the latest episodes.